Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed reports and highlights on major medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.
Welcome to this podcast brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. My name is Dr. Rachel Giles, and today I'll be talking about six of the presentations that were held at the 63rd American Society of Hematology, or ASH, meeting. This year it was held as a hybrid event, both virtually as well as in Atlanta, Georgia, United States, where I was actually present. It was held from the 11th to the 14th of December, 2021. Enjoy listening.
Thank you to all the healthcare professionals who have worked so hard to bring us through the current pandemic.
The late-breaking abstract about the ATLAS AB trial in hemophilia was actually very excited and much talked about. It was presented by Dr. Alok Srivastava from the Christian Medical College in Vellore, India. And it talked about the fitusiran. It's a prophylactic therapy to reduce the annual bleeding rates in patients with severe hemophilia A or B without inhibitors. Dr. Srivastava started off by saying, quote, approximately 70% of patients with hemophilia do not have access to factor replacement therapy, and in addition, this treatment needs to be administered intravenously multiple times per week, placing a heavy treatment burden on the patients. New therapeutic options are really needed to reduce bleeding and treatment burden, as well as to increase the quality of life for patients with hemophilia, end quote. So the ATLAS AB trial included 120 patients with severe hemophilia A or B without inhibitors. Patients were randomized in a 2-to-1 ratio to receive fitusiran, a small interference RNA agent targeting the antithrombin, and it's administered at 80 milligrams in a subcutaneous once-monthly dosing regimen, or on-demand factor concentrates. The primary endpoint was the annual bleeding rate after 9 months. Median annual bleeding rates was 0.0 in the fitusiran arm versus 21.8 in the on-demand arm, and this is obviously a highly significant number. For patients with hemophilia A or B treated with fitusiran, the median annual bleeding rate was 0.0 and 2.7, respectively. In addition, 50.6 of the patients in the fitusiran arm did not display any treated bleedings during the study. The Hemophilia Quality of Life Questionnaire for Adults, the HEMAQOL, as it's called, showed a reduction of 9.68 in total score and 23.07 in physical health score for patients treated with fitusiran, representing a clinically meaningful improvement in quality of life. The safety analysis did not reveal unexpected safety issues. The treatment emergent adverse events were reported in 78.5% of the fitusiran receivers and in 45.0% in the patients on the on-demand arm. The majority of treatment emergent adverse events were mild, moderate, and very reversible. In the fitusiran arm, 6.3% of the patients experienced serious treatment emergent adverse events, compared with 12.5% of the patients in the on-demand arm. The most prevalent treatment-emergent adverse events of special interest was an increased level of alanine aminotransferase, which was reported in 15.2% of the fitusiran receivers. No thrombotic events were observed. At the ASH this year, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, or DLBCL, took a lot of attention. There was a lot of interesting stuff, both new first-line as well as second-line options were presented. And this is going to talk about, this next talk will talk about the first-line treatment, but the second-line treatment was also quite enlightening, with CAR T-cells really showing some interesting data and probably becoming the new standard of care second-line. But let's go back one step further and talk about this talk, which was held by Professor Hervé Tilly at the University of Rouen in France. And he looked at DLBCL patients and how R-CHOP, which is the standard of care regimen for patients with DLBCL, it can cure up to 60 to 70% of patients with that condition. But in the last 20 years, adaptations to the R-CHOP treatment regimen have not really truly succeeded in meeting the unmet need in that entire population. So this was a randomized double-blind phase 3 trial called POLARIX, and it looked at polatuzumab vedotin, an antibody drug conjugate targeting CD79B, to rituximab, cyclophosphamide, doxorubicin, and prednisone. Patients with previously untreated DLBCL, so there are 879 in that cohort, were randomized 1:1 to either 6 cycles of Pola-R-CHP, as they called it, with this polatuzumab-vedotin combination, and that was 1.8 milligrams per kilogram administered through IV, or R-CHOP. The primary endpoint was progression-free survival. So after a median follow-up of 28 months, the Pola-R-CHP regimen showed superiority over the R-CHOP regimen regarding progression-free survival, with a hazard ratio of 0.73, meaning that 27% of the patients benefited significantly here. Similarly, patients in the Pola-R-CHP arm displayed higher event-free survival rates than patients in the R-CHOP arm, with a hazard ratio of 0.75. Although overall response rates did not significantly differ between the two treatment groups, disease-free survival rates had a hazard ratio of 0.70, indicated that patients who achieved a complete response in the Pola-R-CHP arm were much more likely to maintain remission than the patients in the R-CHOP arm who reached a complete response. The overall survival rates were 88.6% in both groups. Notably, patients treated with Pola-R-CHP received fewer subsequent therapies, 22.5%, than patients treated with R-CHOP, which was 30.3%. Exploratory subgroup analyses are ongoing to further specify the results of the POLARIX trial. The safety profiles of the two regimens were comparable, with approximately 57% of the patients in both treatment arms experiencing grade 3 or 4 adverse events. Although febrile neutropenia and diarrhea were the most common in the Pola-R-CHP combination therapy, the treatment with Pola-R-CHP led to fewer dose reductions, 9.2%, than treatment with R-CHOP alone, which was 13.2%. The prevalence of peripheral neuropathy was pretty similar in both research arms. More interesting information about hemophilia A. This was looking at recombinant factor 8 Fc protein, and that therapy seemed to realize immune tolerance in approximately 2 out of 3 patients with severe hemophilia A and high titer inhibitors who underwent immune tolerance induction therapy for the first time. The International Immune Tolerance Study showed that 40% of patients with severe hemophilia with inhibitors in the intent-to-treat population achieved immune tolerance in a median time of approximately 22 months after recombinant factor 8 Fc treatment initiation. However, recent retrospective evidence suggests that a higher success rate and the rapid tolerization in patients who underwent immune tolerance induction therapy for the first time. The current global prospective VERIT-8 study included 16 patients with severe hemophilia with inhibitors to administer first-time therapy. The patients received recombinant factor 8 Fc therapy at 200 international units per kilogram per day for up to 48 weeks. If tolerization was achieved within this time frame, the patients entered a 16-week tapering period and 32-week follow-up period. The primary endpoint was time to tolerization. Treatment success was defined as a negative Bethesda titers plus normal recovery, which is an incremental recovery of greater than or equal to 66%, on 2 consecutive visits, and recombinant factor 8 Fc half-life of greater than or equal to 7 hours. These data were presented by Dr. Lynn Malik from the Veracity Blood Research Institute in Wisconsin, United States. The final results indicated that tolerization was achieved in 63% of the patients with a median time of 11.7 weeks. In addition to the median time to the first negative inhibitor titer was 7.4 weeks, and the median time to normal recovery was 6.8 weeks. No relapses were observed in the patients who achieved tolerization. Bypassing agents APCC and recombinant factor 7A were consumed by 25% and 31.3% of the patients during the ITI period, respectively. The median annualized bleeding rates, the ABRs, were 3.8 during the ITI period and 0.0 during the tapering and follow-up periods. In total, 9 patients experienced at least 1 serious treatment-emergent adverse event. However, none of these events were considered to be related to the treatment itself. The serious treatment emergent adverse events included vascular device infections, contusions, and hemarthrosis. Importantly, no thrombotic events were reported. This next study looked at a combination treatment of quizartinib plus venetoclax plus decitabine, and it looked at patients with relapsed refractory FLT3 ITD mutated acute myeloid leukemia, AML. FLT3 mutations in AML, they're associated with an increased risk in relapse and a reduced overall survival. And although FLT3 inhibitors plus intensive chemotherapy may improve outcomes in younger patients, older or unfit patients continue to display poor outcomes. This was a presentation held by Dr. Musa Yilmaz from MD Anderson Cancer Center in Texas, the United States, and colleagues, and they designed a trial to investigate a triplet combination regimen of quizartinib, decitabine, and venetoclax in relapsed refractory FLT3 mutated patients with AML, and there were 23 in their cohort, or newly diagnosed FLT3 mutated patients who were unfit for intensive chemotherapy, and there were 5 of those patients. During 28-day cycles, patients received decitabine at 20 milligrams per square meter once daily on days 1 to 5, which was their consolidation therapy, or 10, which was induction therapy, and venetoclax at 400 milligrams once daily, and quizartinib was given at 30 to 40 milligrams once daily on day 1 to 14. In the relapsed refractory cohort, a complete response, CR, composite rate of 78% was established, and 13%, 22%, and 43% of the patients showed either a complete relapse with incomplete counts, or morphological leukemia-free state, respectively. The 60-day mortality rate was 5%. In addition, 34% of the patients was bridged to allogeneic bone marrow transplant. In the frontline cohort, the complete response rate was 100%, 40% displayed complete response, and 60% displayed complete response with incomplete counts. The 60-day mortality rate was 0%, and 60% underwent bone marrow transplant. Subgroup analysis showed consistent efficacy in the triplet regimen among patients with prior HMA plus venetoclax therapy or patients who received prior gilteritinib treatment. Patients with the RAS or MAP kinase mutation were associated with lower response rates, 40%, compared with RAS MAP kinase negative patients, which had a 94% response rate. The most common non-hematologic any-grade adverse events were electrolyte disturbances, diarrhea, and kidney or liver function abnormalities. Pneumonia, 42%, febrile neutropenia at 30%, and other infections at 33% were the most common grade 3 or higher adverse events. The median time to absolute neutrophil count recovery was 51 days, but could be reduced to 40 days if gratizumab administration was interrupted on day 28. Grade 2 or higher corrected QT interval by Fredericia events were not observed. In the TRIM2 trial, talquetamab plus daratumumab demonstrated durable and deep responses in heavily pretreated patients with refractory multiple myeloma. Daratumumab, it's a human monoclonal antibody targeting CD38, and talquetamab, it's a first-in-class T-cell redirecting antibody targeting the GPRC5D and CD3 receptors. Dr. Ajay Chari from the Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York City, in the United States, was the main author of this study, and it was a multi-center open-label phase 1b trial called TRIM2, and it investigated the safety and efficacy of this combination regimen of daratumumab, which was administered subcutaneously as per label, plus talquetamab, which was subcutaneously administered as well, in 3 possible regimens, either at 400 micrograms per kilogram every 2 weeks, 400 micrograms per kilogram every week, or 800 micrograms per kilogram every 2 weeks. In total, 29 heavily pretreated patients were included in this particular study. A high proportion of patients had followed prior anti-BCMA therapy at 55.2%, and they were classified as anti-CD38 refractory 65.5%, or triple class refractory at 51.7%. After a median follow-up period of 4.2 months, the overall response rate for the combination therapy of talquetamab plus daratumumab was between 77.8% and 85.7%, depending on the administered talquetamab dose. Moreover, the response to therapy was durable and deep in a significant proportion of the patients, and between 11.1% and 28.6% of the patients displayed a complete response, and 40% to 55.6% of the population demonstrated a very good partial response. The combination therapy was tolerable, and no new safety issues were reported. In addition, no overlapping toxicities were observed. Any grade neutropenia or thrombocytopenia occurred in 41.4% and 34.5% of the patients, respectively. These events resolved in the majority of patients, and one patient discontinued due to hematologic adverse events, but the remaining were all mild. Cytokine release syndrome, 55.2% of all grade 1 or 2, and skin-related disorders were the most common non-hematologic adverse events. Infections were reported in 10 patients, 3 of whom were classified as grade 3 or higher. The results of this phase 1-3 trial indicate that the novel immunotherapy-based approach of talquetamab plus daratumumab is promising for the treatment of multiple myeloma. Dr. David Selman of the Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, Florida, talked about the benefits of epranetipop plus azacitidine for TP53 mutant myelodysplastic syndrome and oligoblastic acute myeloid leukemia. He said, quote, TP53 mutations occur in up to 20% of patients with myelodysplastic syndrome, MDS, and AML, resulting in inferior overall survival outcomes. The current therapies for this population are insufficient, end quote. The combination regimen of epranetipop and first-class P53 reactivator plus azacitidine was evaluated in two phase 2 trials, with a combined cohort size of 100 patients with TP53 mutant MDS or oligoblastic AML. The primary endpoint was complete response rate. The overall response rate was 69% and the complete response rate was 43%. The median time to complete response or partial response was 3.1 months. In addition, 40% of the patients achieved TP53 clearance, as assessed by next-generation sequencing. Furthermore, after 28 months of follow-up, TP53-negative patients displayed a median overall survival of 15.8 months, compared with 10.1 months in the TP53-positive patients, with a p-value of 0.0019. TP53 clearance was strongly correlated with complete response rates, especially in patients undergoing allogeneic hematopoietic stem cell transplantation. After 28 months of follow-up, median overall survival was not reached in patients who achieved TP53 clearance and had received allogeneic stem cell transplants, whereas patients who did not achieve TP53 clearance but underwent allogeneic hematopoietic stem cell therapy had a median overall survival of only 9.1 months. This result indicates that TP53 clearance is an important biomarker for allogeneic stem cell transplantation outcomes in patients with mutant TP53. Notably, patients who had only confirmed TP53 mutations at baseline had higher complete response rates at 52% than patients who also showed non-TP53 mutations at 30%. Moreover, patients with biallelic TP53 mutations or complex karyotype at baseline had higher complete response rates, 49%, than other patients, which was only 8%. The combination regimen of epranetipop and azacitidine was generally safe and well tolerated. The most common non-hematologic adverse events were nausea and vomiting at 58%, ataxia at 26%, dizziness at 23%, and mostly grade 1 or grade 2 events. Febrile neutropenia was the most serious adverse event, occurring in 37% of the patients. However, the 30-day and 60-day mortality rates were very low, 1% and 7%, respectively. That's all the time we have for today. Those were the 6 presentations we selected for your enjoyment. I hope you did learn something. Stay safe and stay healthy.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.